Well, welcome to the Graveyard Shift. The purpose of this podcast is to provide inspiration to funeral home owners and to help you improve your funeral home operations, and also to help you find ways to connect with more families in your business. So as a reminder, this podcast is brought to you by Passari. So my name is Todd Carlson. I'm the host here today and the Chief Sales Officer for Directors Investment Group. And those group of companies includes Passari, Funeral Directors Life, and Claim Check. So I'm shocked. Our cast of characters continues to return. We've got Matt Bailey from Bailey Family Funeral Homes in Connecticut. Matt, welcome back. Glad you could make it. Gary Freitag, Spring Grove in Cincinnati, Ohio, Funeral Home Cemetery Combo and Cincinnati Extraordinaire. And then we have Jimmy Lucas here from the home state of Texas here, from the Fort Worth area, Lucas Family Funeral Homes. And just a reminder for our listeners and viewers, we love your feedback. And we'd love to hear how we're doing. We'd love to hear ideas you have for the show. And you can do provide us that feedback by emailing thegraveyardshift@passari.com. Or if you can, make a comment on your favorite podcast site. And by the way, the reason we have guests on, we have Jamie Tepic with us today. We have guests on because they're the complaint department, Jamie. So we have shared your cell phone and your email address live. I'm kidding.
Thank you. Thank you, Jamie.
Jimmy takes.
I bet she is ready.
We send all complaints to our social worker, Jimmy. But we just wanted to acknowledge before we jump in here, it's just never been harder than it is right now to be a funeral homeowner and a funeral professional. So hopefully the content today will help our funeral homeowners serve their families better and to also have happier and healthier staff. So Jamie Tepic with us, Broussard's, Beaumont, Texas. So Jamie, as we jump in here and talk about changing funeral consumer expectations and ways to serve families, we're going to talk a little bit about your experience with your family's event center and some of the things that you've got going around your event center. But first of all, Jamie, share with us a little bit about yourself and your family's business.
Sure. I'm Jamie Tepic in Beaumont, Texas, with Broussard's Mortuary. We are in Southeast Texas, near the Gulf Coast. My brother and I are fifth generation. My brother Blue, we work together. And I started with the business. We both started whenever we were 15 years old. And I was on a typewriter completing stationery books and spelling cemetery wrong. And then went off to Texas A&M and got a degree in human resources. So I came back to join the business, family business, in a different capacity. And I thought that was just organizing personnel files. And I thought, wow, I really pulled a fast one on them. You know, I don't think I can make this a full-time job. But quickly realized that this is like a whole can of worms. And I would say that's really where my passion is employee relations, taking care of our staff, and working through tough talks are kind of my favorite thing to do. So,
well, awesome. Well, tell us, but I did hear a little rumor that your family also owns a little barbecue joint there in the Beaumont area, and it was named a Texas Monthly Top 50 restaurant. So, what's it like wearing multiple hats?
It definitely keeps the day interesting. Say that we have seen a lot of crossover in some of the personnel issues that we face. But mostly the priority there with that restaurant has been the same as the funeral home, which is just customer service and providing a really consistent product, if you will. And it's lunch has gotten a lot better around the office for sure. Some of us, you know, we work at a certain office. You get to the door and you pass by the restaurant and I mean, you smell like smoke the minute you walk in the door. So that's kind of hilarious. But
I think barbecue smoke is like a West Texas cologne or perfume almost.
Yes. Texas incense.
Yeah.
Awesome. And for people that don't know, Todd, I mean, if they don't follow barbecue, I mean, the Texas Top 50 thing is absolutely huge. So that's like, you know, Texas Monthly, I think, is the only publication in the United States that has a full-time reporter that covers barbecue.
The most important part of this conversation, Jamie, is I know that I've asked Blue for some more 1701 swag. He hasn't given it to me, but I trust that you will make its way to Fort Worth if you're in charge of this.
Say no more, Jimmy. I'll make this happen. And Matt, thank you for recognizing that. It's like somebody said recently, it's like the Grammys of of the restaurant world is this Texas Monthly, and fortunate to be featured the first year we opened, and then again this year. It's a list they put out every 4 years, so they really dedicate a lot of time to research, and we're, privileged for sure.
Awesome. Well, we can shoot a future Graveyard Shift episode at the restaurant. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Barbecue episode.
Yes. Awesome. Well, Jamie, one thing as we dive in here, I think a lot of funeral home owners have viewed this idea of event center and providing event planning as a way to deal with some of the changes in the way that families are coming to into our businesses. So if you could maybe share your perspective on some of the changes that you have seen in your career, in the way families and what they're expecting as far as service and the kind of events that they prefer to have today. So just share some of the changes that your family business has experienced, and then how the event center, how that fit into the event center concept.
Sure. I think that I just want to start by saying I don't think that we have mastered it by any means. I think we're still learning from our mistakes, and consumer trends are still just changing rapidly, as being especially after COVID. And I think the biggest change that we're trying to capture is we noticed that, this didn't just happen in the last 5 years. After every funeral or every service, families going to eat somewhere.
Mm.
You know that's going to happen, whether that's at your facility or at somebody's home or the church. And so something that we've explored is trying to do what we do in funeral service and keep the families at our facility and make that one less thing they have to take care of. That's really the main goal. Whenever you call Broussard's, you come to us because, everything is going to be taken care of. You just have to show up and you've got the hard job of processing the death that has occurred. So leave the rest to us.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. So Jimmy, your approach is, as we were discussing this topic, is you don't have a separate event center, but you hold events in your facility. So talk a little bit about some of the changes you've seen with families and their expectations. What would you add to what Jamie said?
Yeah, the only thing for sure is change, and it's how we manage change that determines our success. So we have purposely, as we've grown and as we've made facility changes, we're trying to go into more of the hosting post-service partnership with local restaurants. We do not own a barbecue restaurant or a restaurant. That's a whole different topic. But we do have friends in the community, and so we've partnered with several of them. That's part of the arrangement conference. That's part of the conversation of, where are you planning to go after the celebration? Whether that's back to the funeral home, or can we help you with that? And we've been very successful at getting folks back into our facility with some tweaks. You have to modify a few things. A lot of funeral homes in the country are pretty old, and never in the 100 billion years was that appropriate to have food. And now that's very much, it's a no-brainer, right? To Jamie's point, people are going to go eat after a service. So we focused on that, and we've pivoted toward that and having some successes.
Hey, Gary, I was fortunate to visit your event center here earlier this spring. Share with us spring growth journey in the event center business.
Well, we've had an event center since we built the funeral home in 98, but we expanded it. We added 10,000 square feet, 2,000-3,000 square foot rooms and a catering kitchen. As you all have already discussed, families want someplace to gather after a funeral's over. And the other element, I don't know how old the Batesville study is. I think it's 6 or 7 years old now, that said the venue is 6 to 7 times more important. I'm sorry, 6 times more important for cremation customers than it is for burial customers. And the other thing you've got going on is the secularization of the United States, less reliance or less affiliation with religion. So even more of those customers want to have a venue that's not a church to go back to. And so we've now got 2,000-3,000 square foot rooms. The reason we pick that size, we have a lot of African-American clientele, and their tradition is the repast. And you really need to have a room that can handle 150 for a reception or an after funeral dinner. Our smaller reception center we originally had would only hold 65, so it really wasn't big enough to accommodate the size crowds that we want to have it. So we're we finished the construction in 21, and it's really been a great success. We are capturing more of the cremation customers. There are five reception halls associated with death care in the city of Cincinnati. We own three of them. Our satellite cemetery has one with a funeral combo, and our African American brand has one as well. So I think it is the future. I think it really is going to be critical. And frankly, it's one of the biggest competitive advantages we have over the local funeral homes that Matt and Jimmy were talking about that don't have the space or they don't have the layout. We've purchased some of those firms, and turning them into getting any kind of reception area is virtually impossible because they're all old chopped up houses from the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. So it's been really important to us, and it's been adopted by the community. We also added a liquor license last fall. That was the only really good output of COVID. There were plenty of liquor licenses to buy in Cincinnati because a lot of the bars went out of business. So that's also becoming more popular as people go, wait a minute, you mean I can have a reception with wine and beer after the funeral's over? Really? Yeah. So it's about educating the public too.
Well, it was definitely worth living through a global pandemic so you could get a liquor license. So
you're absolutely. Like I said, it was the only good thing that came out of it. I didn't say it was. Gee, many Christmas.
Liquor sales are up.
That's right. As Jamie, we were spending more time with our spouses, we had no choice. But hey, so, Jamie, one thing as we were discussing this, if you would kind of give us a little bit of a feel for your family's journey into going into an event center, what kind of priorities did you set as you were thinking about creating an event center? Did you choose to go offsite or repurpose space? I mean, tell us a little bit about your family's journey in making the decision to have an event center.
Sure. I hope it's okay to start. I mean, to really go back, I think it was around 2008 where my late Uncle Tom, we had purchased acquired a funeral home that was just a couple blocks away from one of our existing locations, and we were going to convert it to half reception space, half administrative offices, and we did that. And we found that we used it for more weddings and churches and a few speed dating events than we did receptions. I think we were just a little ahead of our time in our area and probably missed the mark on the rollout with our staff as far as communicating that to families. And so there was just too much friction. It wasn't convenient for anybody. And so so now we have since converted that space just to more office space. And then in 2019, we decided to take a stab, if you will, at a different industry, a little more proactive industry, the wedding industry. My dad had a lot of success out of town in my hometown outside of Beaumont with a wedding venue. And so we had this great industrial space in downtown Beaumont. And I mean, it was just wide open. It was just asking to be an event space. So we cleaned it up, turned the lights on, and really marketed that as a wedding and private event space. And wouldn't you know, before too long, Jim Broussard is calling saying, hey, can the Smith family have a reception after the funeral at the wedding venue? And, you know, absolutely, we're going to make it happen. And so we've done that successfully several times. And I think, you know, it is a drive. It is a different location. It's not the most convenient, and we are seeing that. So Jimmy said, at his location, we're looking to add on some space to one of our locations to keep people there. Because really convenience is key.
Yeah, so that's quite the journey. And, we've seen it go both ways where some people create event centers and people come in and say, hey, can I have a wedding there? You created a wedding center. And then, Jim says, hey, can we have a funeral there? That's an interesting spin on things. One thing is we were visiting Jamie and just getting to know you over the last couple of years at a at a deeper level, your passion is your people, right? So let's talk a little bit about how your event center and the services associated with events has really changed the culture of your own business.
Oh, it's changed the culture tremendously. I think that we really threw out the rule book when it came to hiring folks, aside from, you know, our licensed professionals, which are critical to our business. But we kind of threw out the rule book as far as skill set when it came to hiring. And we're really just interested in hiring kind, collaborative people that are willing to do anything on any given day to help out. And so what that looks like is I have a funeral director who has helped us haul tables or chairs to the event space to do a quick flip if we're in a pinch. You know, that's not every day, but the attitude to step in and help makes all the difference. It's not for somebody in accounting, if they've got a little break, to go help with linens, or our graphic design team and our HR people, they're going to help. We're a very collaborative culture. So nobody at our company that says, you know, that's not my job.
Yeah, I think that's important. So Gary, when you, you know, you've had your event center and your new one been open, how is having this focus on events kind of changed the perspective of your licensees and your non-licensed staff?
Well, it makes their lives a lot more complicated. Let's put it that way. When you shift from doing more traditional religious-based services to going to a more customized, more secular clientele, it adds more variables and more complexity to the funeral. The other element that we didn't anticipate is the complexity of just running the event center, keeping up with the rules and regs that are associated with those. Mm-hmm. My one piece of advice is you do not want to be cooking food, because that increases the complexity of running an event center exponentially. One of the other things we had a huge challenge with is, as I said, we have a lot of African-American repasts, and the tradition in that community is they bring in their own food and the church ladies serve it. And when we built the new event center, we basically said, you're not bringing in your own food. There's too much risk there. You know, Aunt Edna's potato salad's been in the trunk of the car for 6 hours, and all of a sudden everybody gets sick. So we did find a caterer that we have a variety of caterers that offer different types of food, including more the kinds of food that are typically served at a repast. And so all of that, I think at the end, you're working it out. As Jamie said, it's kind of trial and error. You learn what works, what doesn't work. But in general, I think our staff has adapted to the fact that a large percentage of our clientele wants to have a venue. And one of the big things we offer that's a competitive advantage is convenience, because you can do a service in the front part of the funeral home, go out and do a burial or an interment, and then come back, and the reception center is off the back of the funeral home. So I think all those elements, like I said, I don't think we've mastered them yet, but we're getting better. Because if you're going to be in the funeral business, you've got to be in the event planning business, and that's going to be part of it going forward.
And I can certainly echo all of those challenges that you mentioned, Gary, every single one of them. You know, we've walked through and are still navigating, so you're not alone.
Yes.
So you get people that are getting sick because of your food. Don't you think that's a pre-planning opportunity?
But it needs to be our food, because we need to get them the right kind of sick. Yeah. Plus, it gives our lawyers something.
I'm here and you're here.
Yeah, you know, those are all, you know, real challenges. And, you know, so the kind of one of the things that our listeners might be thinking about is, so, you know, you guys, is if they're looking at repurposing some existing space or. No, I was just going to throw out there the, you know, where is the, you know, how have you seen it impact your business? You know, you have to think about it. You're running a business, it needs to be profitable. How has your event center contributed, or the food and beverage angle contributed to the financial health of your business? So, Jamie, let's start with you, and then we'll kind of go around the horn on this one.
I was actually hoping to talk to Jimmy Lucas about this.
That is my question. So it's not, it's for us, it's an added service. We're not knocking it out of the park. You know, we're not getting new vehicles because of income coming in from catering with an outside partner. But what we're doing is
but you are getting leftovers.
Yeah, yeah, that's part of my problem. Is the customer satisfaction is what we're going for, right? So
yeah,
I was going to ask you guys that same question. Do you see a significant financial gain by doing, because a lot of extra work, and you know, you run in these circles and you go to the conventions and you hear people talk about it, but I haven't experienced that this has been a huge deal for us as far as financially rewarding. We enjoy doing it because we are servants, right? That's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And filling in a gap and allowing people to stay in our facility versus going elsewhere, that all makes sense to me. And that's what we're seeing. But as far as having a huge return, now we're not doing beer and wine here. We do allow it, but I would love to get a liquor license. I like wine.
Jimmy, I will echo everything that you've said. We haven't seen a substantial change by offering these services. I think what we're hoping to do is hold on to the families and continue to serve these families for generations to come. And so if we're not providing what they're looking for, we may lose that opportunity altogether. So it's pivot, and everybody gets something new to work on today, and we have a new kind of puzzle to solve and how we're going to serve this family. It's either that or we're not serving families at all. And I know for sure, if something happens to me soon, like, please hand out dirty martinis at the door.
Yes.
Three blue cheese stuffed olives.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I can give you the statistics. Last year, our event center generated about $500,000 in revenue. About half of that was room rentals and the other half was food and or alcohol. That is not going to give you a great return on a $4.2 million expansion. Mm-hmm. However, I just talked to my board about this. In the last 6 years, the percentage of cremation customers that are having a memorial service or a service as opposed to a direct cremation has doubled. It's gone from 15 to 30. And I think the main reason for that is because we offer a venue that's an alternative to the country clubs and the wedding reception halls. One other comment on events that I was going to make earlier. We stopped doing weddings because there were so many challenges about keeping the wedding parties apart from the funeral parties. So, for instance, we have an 1860s chapel, and if you tell the wedding party, you get the chapel from 1 to 4, and you're doing a funeral 11:30, what happens is the entire wedding party shows up at 11 to decorate. And in case you haven't been involved in this, the mothers of the bride are not always the most rational people. And so you got a group of younger people, some of whom may be chemically enhanced, who are having a great time and want to get in there, and they're mixing with a family that just lost their mom or, God forbid, a child or something like that. And we just finally said it's not worth doing. The only time we ever do a wedding is if it's an employee and they want to do it on a Sunday. We just said we're very flexible. We built the event center to capture the cremation customer. We're not going to be in the wedding business anymore. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, Jimmy.
Yeah, I think
it's okay. Nobody's listening. We've done a couple of weddings. I've officiated both weddings and funerals, like Matt has. My best one was we had a coworker that got married, and we hosted it here. And the only request was that I dress like Elvis. So there are pictures of me officiating a wedding dressed as Elvis floating out in the ethos. So
nice.
We'll do anything to satisfy people.
You know, Todd, we have a friend, too, who has a funeral home that's not a combo technically, but it's associated right near a cemetery on the property. And he has a major event space there. And he has a lot of families that are doing maybe a direct cremation with their traditional funeral home they've always worked with. And then when they go to the cemetery to bury the urn, that's when they decide to have their reception or their gathering. And he has told me stories where he has families coming in and they're writing checks in excess of $10,000 for the event after they have paid a direct cremation rate for the funeral home that they worked with previously.
Yeah.
And my wonderment about that is the next time that family has a death, when they walk through the doors of his funeral home and have that experience, when it's time for them to make the arrangements for the disposition, who do they call that time? Do they continue to call the firm that they've always used for generations, or do they now call the one where they're going to be there anyway for the reception and they're going to be there for all of that? And why don't we just do it so we could go over the menu at the same time we're going over vital statistical information?
Yeah.
And I think that's the opportunity for folks to be thinking about. And that gets me worried as well, because a place in my state where we can't have food, we can't have beverages, my competition isn't necessarily they're walking into another funeral home that is offering it. They're walking into a country club, or they're walking into a hotel, or they're walking into a wedding venue, or they're walking into a banquet facility, or they're walking into a large restaurant. And that's where they're doing it. And I could offer to help them out with it, but why would they go through me if they could just do it themselves? And they have the helpful friend who's going to go in and do the menu and do all of that planning. So we're definitely behind the eight ball in the state I operate in, with our hands being tied that way, largely because of our colleagues who want to keep them that way.
Yeah, that's a real challenge. I was at a funeral director.
Give me a
let's listen. Throw some funeral directors under the bus while
it's
we're
not hard
the show.
To figure out who it is.
Yeah, well, you increase our listenership by this episode by one if we can get, you know, throw one person under the bus and they hear about
let's
it.
Do but it. No, we'll love it.
Yeah, no. One thing I was thinking about, because I noticed it, like it was probably 3 or 4 years ago, it was in the middle of COVID, but the or right after things had loosened up, I was at a funeral directors meeting up in Minnesota in Minneapolis at a Sheraton Hotel, the state association meeting. On the way to our meeting room, there were placards on two other meeting rooms that were memorial events for people who had died. And that really got me thinking, the importance of trying to find a way to extend these services to families in a way that does keep them in our care. Right. You know, I think that so they come back to us, so they don't, pay us the, $2,200 for the cremation and then go somewhere else for the rest of the experience when we can have that experience. But so one thing this kind of brings up, Jamie, is this idea of the do-it-yourself mentality, right? There's a lot of people who want to be, I think there's part of it is a do-it-yourself mentality personally. There's another part of it where people just want to be involved in their loved one's death in planning experience. So how has your event center helped you deal with those who kind of have that do-it-yourself mentality, and how do you navigate that in your event center?
Sure. We, our facility, our event space is, really just facility only. So we've got a manager that will help coordinate you with all the other vendors that you'll need to put on a wedding. But, we're not this turnkey venue like some in our area where you come in, you write the big check, you use our catering, you use our decorators, our florists. We're really allowing couples to build the wedding themselves, and I think they appreciate that control and that decision making. And so I think I've seen the same thing in funeral services, that people really want options and they want to build things themselves or create an experience themselves. They want some say in it. And I was thinking about this, and it's kind of like grocery shopping in this area. I think that, in my experience anyway, that people want the perception or the illusion that they are doing it themselves. You know, we used to see the self-checkout line at the grocery store, and those have kind of gone by the wayside here. But now you can shop online ahead of time and pull up, and they will bring things to your car. So there's still that service option there. Or in a bigger city, they can bring your groceries to your doorstep, so at home. So I think families are still wanting options. They're still wanting to have some say, where in the past, maybe packages were the big thing and the big trend, and they wanted everything bundled up. I think now I'm seeing families want to kind of have some a la carte options.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The rest of the panel react to kind of how you're dealing with the do-it-yourselfers in your communities and the families that are coming to your businesses?
I think people want to be in more control. When you talk about loss and grief, you're talking about folks that don't have a lot of control. So if we're able to give them a little bit more control in an environment that, or in a space that they haven't had that, that's a good thing. But I think it's also, we're always going to be a people profession. So having someone to have those comments of, some families have also found it helpful to do X, Y, and Z. So there are some guidelines in which you can help to facilitate a DIY without it just them going, we have no idea what we want to do. Because some people just freeze. They don't know what they don't know. So being able to balance that for someone that comes in and is super organized and they have the spreadsheet, we want this, 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 and this, that's fantastic. We follow directions really well. Versus also saying, we found that a lot of families that are doing this have found this really helpful and it's gone really smooth when they do this. So having a balance of that and being prepared to pivot to meeting that family with where that family is going to probably be the key to success, I would think.
Yeah, I think it does open up the challenge of trying to identify in the family, and are they do-it-yourselfers? Do they want full service, you know, white glove service where they just want to outsource all of the aspects of the event to the funeral home, or they want to be somewhere in the middle, right? And so that adds a step in the process, but I think it's an important one because I think what hasn't changed is the funeral homes need to be the guide in the process. Doesn't matter who's doing the labor. That's my take. Jamie, I got kind of as we kind of wind down here, a little bit of advice. So if I'm a funeral home owner and I'm sitting in, you know, kind of a typical funeral home in typical America, and you were in charge of giving advice to that funeral director and being their guide when it comes to an event center, what kind of advice would you give a funeral home owner as they contemplate the opening of an event center?
I would absolutely say start small, start with what you have. Mm-hmm. And start, you know, with the amount of risk as you can. And that may seem super obvious, but when your resources are limited, you know, they say never waste a crisis, kind of that mindset. When your resources are limited, you really have to use what you have. And I think you can be really innovative and creative in those times versus whenever you have these exponential resources and the sky's the limit and everybody starts dreaming really big, you can get out of line real quick. So do you have a chapel that has some really dated pews that you've been meaning to repair? Can you go back with chairs? Did you just transform your chapel to a flex space? And so I would look for little opportunities like that and start small with what you have.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great advice. I think, you know, trying to get a feel for the demand and the language that you have to use, you know, because I think you mentioned it early on is, you know, the impact of your staff too, thinking about how it changes the dynamics of the arrangement. And you talked about when you opened your first center, and I believe you said, you know, in the early 2000s that your staff was a little left behind. So how do you wrestle with those staffing issues too? I mean, what are some thoughts or some advice you'd give on that?
Just like anything new you're trying to roll out with your staff, I don't think it matters on the topic. I've learned that you have to communicate three times as much as you think you should. I always tell my managers, like, okay, call these people first, say it over the phone, then visit them in person, say it again, then follow up with an email to recap to make sure it sticks, and then we hope and pray. Then everybody's still going to interpret that very differently. So I think the best advice that I would give and what I've learned from mistakes is get input from your people, not just looking at a P&L statement and making decisions that way. You want to be asking questions from your team members and try to get buy-in from them. I think they'll be much more engaged if they have a say in the outcome when you can.
Yeah, great advice. Anything anyone else would add to that?
When you get to a certain level of scale, we went and hired somebody from the hospitality world, not from the end-of-life services world, who had been doing that her entire life. And so she is absolutely fabulous in both scenarios where, hey, how do we do this? And she'll play out the whole thing. Or if somebody comes in really organized, she'll actually have ideas and say, yeah, we did that, but if you add this, it'll work better. Or you need to split the two buffet lines or have a second bar if you're going to have that many people. She's really, really good at assessing, taking what the family gives her as input and then modifying it or suggesting things that make the event either more special or make it work better. So she's been a tremendous hire for us. And she brings different perspectives than somebody that's been a professional funeral director for a long period of time.
to kind of add to starting small. When you think about tables, chairs, linens, and things of that nature, those are all pretty costly items. And so something that we did at our event space for the first year, I think, we rented tables for every event. So that allowed us to kind of get our feet wet, practice, and it bridged that gap with the staff as well. So whenever we were renting tables, that company would deliver those tables, set up those tables, come and break them down and get them out of there. So that helped us a lot. And finally, once we booked out events and saw, okay, we can cover these costs, then we went ahead and purchased the tables our own and kind of figured out the rest of the logistics there. So
Good advice.
Now, that's great advice, because I think it also allowed you to see what works and what sizes of tables and shapes of tables work in your venue. Awesome. All right, Jimmy, did you have something you wanted to add before we wrap up here?
I don't remember what that was. I think when we had our big last remodel here, we were going to build an events center on the same property, and it didn't happen. And looking back, I was thankful that it didn't. You know, there's being confident in what you know and being confident in what you don't know are both very important. And at that time, being confident that I didn't know what I didn't know about events and how to utilize that space. So we took the baby step approach, and now revisiting 4 years later what that vacant piece of property looks like for us. So I appreciated feedback from both Jamie and Gary on how their operations are working. And
I'm glad to hear we're not the only ones, Jimmy, because we've had a couple projects like that in the last 4 or 5 years where we think we know exactly what we want, and then we get into it and we go, hold the phone, you know, this doesn't feel like it, but they will come.
A funeral director in Florida once told me that sometimes the best deal you ever do is the one you don't do. And there's a lot of wisdom there.
Well, definitely. Well, hey, let's do this. First of all, let's all thank Jamie for her time today and her insight, not only from you know, how to start an event center, and she's done it. They started small and then dreamed big, and then have come back around to maybe considering some on-site event space, how it's impacted staffing and the service you deliver, how it helps you stay competitive in a very competitive funeral service landscape. So Jamie, your tips and your advice and your insight, very, very helpful to us and our listeners. So thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you.
Yeah, and with that, we'd just like to say, hey, thank everyone for joining us for our podcast today. Oh, there we go. Oh, my goodness.
I love
Jamie.
It.
Jamie.
Oh, wow, yeah, there it is.
That is all on Texas A&M helmet there.
That is a cult college down there in College Station, and she just proved it.
Is that a junior college or not?
The irony of the football helmet for, you know, to represent. Anyway, but like Corso. Perfect, Anyway, thank you guys for making me feel welcome today.
Yeah, well, awesome. Well, that is the way to close a graveyard shift, is to pull out a Texas A&M football helmet and go all in, Jamie. So you committed to the bit. So thank you much for that.
And yeah, I can't tell
Jamie.
Hey, thanks, everyone. If you have some comments, like, subscribe, share The Graveyard Shift on your favorite podcast platform. Shoot us your feedback at thegraveyardshift@basari.com. And as always, take something you learned today and put it to use. Thanks, everyone.